Manhattan Bank has been serving the Gallatin Valley since 1905. Started by local farmers in order to help grow the agriculture industry, Manhattan Bank has since grown into a full-service bank serving the entire valley. With branches in Manhattan, Churchill, Three Forks, and Bozeman, you're never far from your local bank.
As banks are consolidating and changing, Manhattan Bank sets themselves apart through consistency and a small-town banking feel. Come see why we have been in the valley for well over 100 years. Stop by the new building in Bozeman. See Justin Skillman and Tyler Dosher for your business banking and Brad Whitmer for your home loans. Go Cats.
Member FDIC.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy. All right, welcome back, Bobcat fans. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the R&R CatCast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Foley. He's your host, Ryan Thornburg. We are the Ryans of the R&R CatCast, the Montana State affiliate of the Big Sky Podcast Network. We have a sweet sponsor in Manhattan Bank, taking care of all your banking needs in the Gallatin Valley. Four locations, Bozeman, Churchill, Manhattan, and Three Forks. Happy to have Manhattan Bank on board for this season. Thorny, we had to post-delay our show. That's why we haven't been out earlier in the week, but we're back. We're ready to talk Bobcat football heading into the semifinals against South Dakota State, a rematch.
Man, I've been excited to talk about this, man. We didn't talk. We didn't do an instant reaction show. We didn't do our Monday show. We haven't talked since last Monday.
I know, man.
It's the longest we've gone a while without talking about Bobcat football between you and me on a podcast in like years, I feel, between games. So I'm excited. Yes. Back in the saddle.
Well, it was a busy weekend. It was my 40th birthday. So Woo. We had like plans. I know, man. It was a big day. I normally don't like talking about my birthday, but here I am blabbing about it on my podcast. So we had stuff going on this weekend. Couldn't do the instant reaction, but I did get to watch the game. And I did get to watch a little bit of the South Dakota State game. So we'll have some talking points on that for sure.
Sounds good. And I'll try and get this one edited quickly and pushed out quickly. So maybe the audio quality will suffer a little bit, but we got to get this thing out fully. We got a lot to talk about too.
Absolutely. Right on, right on. Okay, well, let's get into the show rundown of what we got going on. Let me look at our document. We're going to talk about our beer. We'll talk a little bit about the news, if there is any news. We're going to recap quickly the William and Mary game. We planned on doing two episodes this week, but I was not feeling good on Monday. And so we're going to shorten up the William and Mary recap and spend a little bit more time on South Dakota State and some Golden Coulee questions, because we've got quite a few Golden Coulee questions.
We do. We have a lot of good Golden Coulee questions. So excited to answer those.
Woo! All right, man. Well, I think we just get into it. Let's talk about what's in our Golden Coulees.
Let's get right into it, man.
What's in your Golden Coulee?
Ooh, I wasn't sure what button that was. I've done this a bunch of times now. I'm like, please don't hit the wrong button that makes like the wah-wah sound. I have a Samuel Adams Winter Lager. That's all I got.
Whoa.
It's winter football season. This one just like seemed like the right beer to drink for a cold, icy game in Bozeman victory. And it sounds like it's going to be pretty chilly and icy and bad weather over in Brookings on Saturday. So Winter Lager, festive and smooth, Samuel Adams. I love a good winter beer. Samuel Adams, I think, is one of my favorite micro brews, I guess you could say.
Really? They're so East Coast. You're such a West Coast guy.
They make good like lagers and stuff. They make good winter ales. They make good ales.
Yeah. Okay. One of the presents for my 40th birthday party was a six pack of one offers. And I pulled one out of there today. It's called No Bad Days. That's why I chose it, man. No Bad Days.
Nice. I like
it. In the semis, bro. 3 years going from Barrel Mountain Brewing in Barrel Mountain, Washington, I believe. Battleground, Washington. Battleground. There it is. So I don't know where Battleground is. Do you?
I think no. Well, I was gonna give a guess, but I don't know where it is. You haven't cracked it. You haven't sipped it to tell us how.
No,
it tastes?
You know, I was drinking up a little bit of water. We had a staff party, our holiday party, our Christmas party right after work, and so I was hydrating with some water after that. So here it is, first taste.
All right, so I'm going to talk while you sip, so no one has to hear you sipping beer. How was it?
It's very IPA-ish. All right. Nice, crisp, clean. I like it.
All right. Well, there it is, people. Tell us what you're drinking on this very merry few weeks before Christmas. Not quite a holiday in Bobcat Land. It's going to be a holiday here soon if the Cats can continue to win.
Man, I'm nervous. I'm really nervous. I'm like, I don't want this thing to end yet.
I know. So, right?
We'll talk about the SDSU game. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but I'm a little bit nervous. So, hey, let's go into the news. You told me, and it's in our document, Afonso and Stones Glessner. What do you got on them?
So just a couple record-setting performances or careers so far for the Bobcats happened against William & Mary. So I figured we'd talk about that now before we get into the game so we don't forget about it. As Isaiah Afonso broke Ryan Johnson's record set in 2002, all-time rushing yards in Montana State history on a 68-yard touchdown run. So that big, huge touchdown run where he burst up the middle untouched to the end zone, broke the record. And he ended the night with 3,715 yards, breaking Ryan Johnson's previous record of 3,646 yards. And I think I heard on Coulter's show, ESPN Missoula, that he did it with like 100 and some odd less carries than Ryan Johnson, too.
And yeah, that's true. And he didn't need the COVID year to do it either. So he did it in his fourth year playing, which is comparable to what RJ did.
No, and he's got a lot of football left to play. Just crazy. Like, yeah. When it's all said and done, if he stays healthy, that record's going to stand for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely it will. Considering the coaches he's played for who just want to pound the rock and just his ability to run the ball. Coulter was talking about how low Afonso gets, like when he takes on runners, have you ever noticed how he just dips his pads low to the ground and like bullhorns the player and just they can't really get to his legs when he does that, and he just plows through them. It's unbelievable.
Sometimes he goes so low that he basically takes himself out of the play though. That happened to against William & Mary. He went right and like just lowered his shoulder so low that there's like a defender basically falling down and he like fell on top of him. So sometimes a little bit to his detriment, but it's his balance is one of his biggest advantages as a runner, one of his biggest strengths. So good having him back in the fold.
It's true.
Somewhat so fun to watch him play and healthy, getting strong at the right time because we're going to need that next week. But to continue on the conversation here, Blake Glessner broke a record for points scored in a single season. He is up to 137 points now. He did it on a 50-yard field goal against William & Mary, which is the longest in playoff history as well. Thank you, MontanaSports.com, for this document, giving me all this good information here. Let's see. Tom Wiley is the one who put this together. And
yeah, I know Tom. He's a friend of mine.
That's right. Yeah, I always forget that. But the previous record, do you know who the previous record holder was for points in a single season? Trivia question.
Probably Jason Cunningham.
No, it's not a kicker.
Was it Cody Kirk?
Nope. It's a Montanan, though.
Tanner Bleskin?
Troy Anderson.
Troy mother effing Anderson.
Troy quarterback Anderson. 128 points in 2018. Oh, man. From his quarterback spot.
How did I not get that, man? This is like, that was a softball question.
It wasn't a softball question because I read that. I'm like, oh, no way. That's why I asked you to see if you could get it because I don't think I would have ever guessed that Troy was number two. I would have gone straight to Jason Cunningham is who I would have guessed.
Well, at least we're on the same page with Sunshine.
I mean, almost every...
It's awesome for Stones, man.
Yeah. No, he's had a great year. He's really improved as the year went on and kind of... you know, he had a little bit of an issue at the end of last year, but he's really shook that and had a really good sophomore season. I forget he's only a sophomore, right? So pretty impressive season for Blake Lesnar, and he's not done yet. None of these guys are done yet.
The All-American teams came out. Brody Grebe was like a third-team athlete.
I mean,
he didn't get one guy on second team or first team.
There's so many postseason All-American things now. That one was the it was the Associated Press, which I don't even know.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Is it though?
I think so.
I don't know.
The AP poll.
I put way more stock into like Sam Herder's All-Americans than I do AP. But yeah, Brody Grebe, which Grebe is a great player and he's had a good season, but for him to be the only guy on the list seems a little interesting to me. But I put that out on Twitter today. I have to explain this to you nowadays because you don't have Twitter. I put it out that how many All-American AP players each semifinal team had. It was like 5 for North Dakota State, 5 for Incarnate Word, 4 for South Dakota State, and then 1 for Montana State. Just ridiculous. Like, and I get why, but I think it's just a testament of how good of a team and a program Montana State is over any individual elite talent necessarily.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. That's the biggest difference I see this year than last year. It's not as much about the stars as it is the team.
No.
And I really like that. That's a cool narrative to follow.
No, last year's cast of characters was so memorable. You had Lance McCutcheon, Troy Anderson, Daniel Hardy. I'm missing somebody. Chase Benson. Yeah.
Amandre Williams.
Amandre
Webb.
Amandre Williams. Yeah, it was just a really good.
Lewis Kidd. Tui Asisopo.
Just.
I mean.
Bobcats that have been in the program for a long time and won lots of games and cemented their place in Bobcat history as like fan favorites and record breakers. And then this year, yeah, just none of that really. But that's not a bad thing.
No, and likely, in my eyes, we're a better team.
Yeah.
A more complete team.
More complete.
I should say.
More complete.
It's a better way of saying it.
All right. Well,
okay.
Any other news? The press conference didn't, I don't think there's any injury news to talk about, which is good to hear. I think, speaking of Brody Grebe, I don't think he played much against William & Mary. I think he's still nursing something. I think he's listed as a starter. Got a lot of time, though.
The only other thing I could think about is we've completed back-to-back undefeated seasons at home. We have a 20-game win streak at home.
That's worth mentioning.
Which we will have to start up again next year at Gold Rush. I think we are also going back to South Dakota State again next year.
We are.
Going back to Brookings, yeah.
Which is funny.
That's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think Victor Flores tweeted out that he realized none of the people covering Montana State right now have ever seen the Bobcats lose at home.
Quite the statistic.
Because 2019 was the last time?
Yeah. I think you and I were there, actually.
Yeah, it was probably that Sac State game. The homecoming game against Sac State 2019. That's probably the last time. Jeez.
Yeah. You can thank us.
Yeah.
For not coming to those Bobcat games.
Yep. We went to the Oregon State game. Whoop-de-doo.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all we do. I went to Cat Grizz, though.
Think about that.
There we go. Okay. I broke it.
So think about that, Thorny. We went to the NAU game. We lost. We went to a Gold Rush game.
What,
so
NAU?
NAU
game?
No, not NAU. Sac State game, sorry.
Yep.
The homecoming. The next year, we went to Gold Rush. We won that. We went to the national championship the same year. We lost that. And then we went to Oregon State together. We lost that.
Yep.
So we're like...
Together, we're
3 out of 4 games.
Yeah, we're one,
really bad.
One of three, one fourth, one and three, excuse me.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we go to the national championship again. If we end up going, I think you and I are leaning towards no right now, unfortunately, with a lot of our things. But that's a big if, because we got a big game coming up, and I'm not going to put the cart before the horse on that conversation.
All right. Hey, let's get right into William and Mary. Let's can recap that game. The beatdown, the 55-7 beatdown in Bozeman last Friday. Feels like forever ago. Maybe because I've been just so jacked about this upcoming game. I have all my stats looking at. I'm looking at my pad right here, Thorny. It's just like, I can't remember writing any of this down. It just feels like forever ago to me.
Yeah,
I remember you. Feels like that for you.
I remember texting you on Sunday night when you're doing your little stat, your little prep that you do at the brewery usually, right? On Sunday nights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we just didn't record on Monday.
We were celebrating. Yeah, we were celebrating Sunday night because that was my birthday, and I was busy that night. So
fair enough.
Out with the family.
That is legit. But anyway, here we are recording on Wednesday, December 14th. Let's do a quick stat rundown on this game. The Bobcats win this game 55-7 in just an absolute dominant fashion. 22 first down for the Cats, which is crazy. 55 points with only 22 first downs seems kind of crazy. Only 9 first downs for William & Mary. William & Mary was 2 of 15 on third down. That's not
beautiful.
Good. That's beautiful, yes. Beautiful for us. Cats are only 2 of 7, though, surprisingly, in this game. So there's one work upon, as you like to say. 473 yards of total offense for the Bobcats to just 197 for William & Mary, who only mustered up 62 passing yards on 7 for 18 attempts and 135 yards on the ground. And I'm pretty sure over half of that came on their touchdown final drive in the fourth quarter when all of our third stringers were in. Cats were 8 of 11 passing the ball for 145 yards, but 328 yards on the ground on 42 attempts for 7.8 yards per carry. Each team penalized 7 times in this game, a little bit sloppy. William & Mary was getting a little chippy, and I think they got at least 3 of those were personal fouls on William & Mary, 7 for 93 yards. Cats were 7 for 55, which is, you know, if you add up the totals there, it's not very many yards per penalty, so they were of the more 5-yard variety. Each team turned the ball over once. The Cats lost a fumble where William & Mary, Darius Wilson threw an interception by Simeon Woodard, and the Cats actually lost a time of possession on this one. That could be a first potentially all season. 29 minutes and 3 seconds. William & Mary had the ball for 30 minutes and 57 seconds, but the Cats just scored so quickly in so many different ways that they didn't have the ball for very long. And I don't think they even ran that many plays this game either. Just kind of a weird one-sided game that, and you'll go through the personal stats here, but there's not a whole lot to really take away from this game, in my opinion, but we'll get into that. Well, so
here's a stat you didn't cover. William & Mary punted 10 times for 436 yards, and we only punted 3 times, I think all in the first quarter.
Yeah, we went 3 and out on our first 2 drives, I believe. Yeah. Both teams like traded 3 and outs right off the bat. So you're thinking like, all right, here we go. This could be a defensive struggle. This could be a game that's, you know, a lot tougher than some of the fans were thinking, at least initially, but that didn't last very long.
All right, let's get into some personal stats. Tommy Mellott was 7 for 9 for 106 yards. In passing, he had 1 touchdown, and then he had 10 rushes for 45 yards with 3 touchdowns. So not his biggest statistical day, but we didn't really need him, and I kind of like that, to be honest with you. Chambers was 1 for 1, 39 yards, and I think that pass was to maybe Trayton Pickering. I can't remember off the top of my head now. It's been a while since I can recall that play, but he had 5 rushes for 44 yards. Afonso, he had the banner day out of all the Bobcats. He had 11 rushes for 162 yards with a long of 68. What a cool way to break the record on his 68-yard touchdown. He did have 2 touchdowns, but that being the banner one. Pickering had 1 catch for 42 yards. Cleveland Thomas, man, he got himself, he had the most catches. He had 3 catches. He had a touchdown as well. It was good to see Cleveland get into the end zone. I've been just kind of rooting for that quietly. Marquis Johnson, oh my gosh. He had an 87-yard return, and he just stumbled. He had it. It had the turf not been frozen, I think he would have took it to the house. Taco Dowler did take it to the house on a 79-yard touchdown. I don't know why, but kept punting to Taco. It's like the first team we've seen since like week 2 that's punted to Taco, but just showed how dangerous he is. He had 6 returns for 143 yards. And then Stones Glessner, 2 for 2 from 30 and 50. And Stones was 7 for 7 on extra points. Cal had 5 solo tackles or 7 total, or excuse me, 3 solo, 7 total, and 1.5 tackles for a loss. And then Simeon Woodard had an interception, and Ty Akata had 2 tackles for a loss. So Ty continuing to play in the backfield.
Love it.
I think Ty has some sacks. Was that this game or was that last game?
I know he had two last game, but I think he may have had another one this game. But either way, he's getting in the backfield more, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, the way they're using him is slightly different. The way that the defense in general has just been gelling. But one of the critiques I have on this game is William and Mary didn't really try to pass the ball. I don't know why they didn't. They had nothing to lose. They were down big, and then continued to run the ball. And we were just swallowing them up. I was happy to see that. But like you said, what did they have? How many passes did they have? Only 18?
Yeah.
That didn't make sense to me. I thought they would test us against the air. And they didn't really try all that much.
No, they didn't. And I know the quarterback was having a little bit of a hard time handling the conditions. They all were. But he was able to scramble and out to his left. He's left-handed quarterback. And he had plenty of time to look down. And he missed some open receivers. The receiver dropped one or two. But yeah, once you're down like 17-0, like I don't understand why they didn't try to air it out a little bit more because the ground game just wasn't working for him.
Side note, did you see our players wear different cleats? They were wearing like Reebok, like turf shoes, like with the waffle pattern on the bottom. Did you notice that?
How do you see the pattern on the bottom of their cleats? Were you like pausing and zooming in on it?
I got really good eyes. I really got good eyes.
I mean, I know some guys were wearing just like taped up like all the way around the middle of the shoe. But I noticed some different people wearing different things. That's about it.
It was like all the guys were wearing black Reeboks. And I was like, where do those come from? You don't even see Reeboks anymore. But there was like a slew of them out on the field. It's like the old school turf shoe. You know what I'm talking? That doesn't have the aggressive cleats, but it has like the bumpy bottom to it that you'd see like old time, like Mike Schmidt wear on like AstroTurf, that kind of shoe. That's what they were wearing out there.
No, can't say it. I paid that much attention.
All right.
I didn't see the logos because I taped up everything. How do you know they're Reeboks?
I told you I have good eyes, dude.
Clearly.
Start believing me.
I don't know if I believe you. I think you've read it. I think you're just regurgitating what you've read.
Whatever, man.
That's what I believe.
Whatever.
Bronson Yoder, 26 carries, 422 yards. I was pretty impressed with Bronson Yoder. And yes and no. I did watch him for the first like three quarters. I'm like, how did this guy have like 1,100 rushing yards? But you kind of saw a little bit in the fourth quarter. He was pretty much the only guy on William & Mary that never gave up. And I got a lot of respect for Bronson Yoder. He tried hard. I'm kind of glad he got a touchdown, that William & Mary got a touchdown. And just, you feel bad at a certain point, but I thought he was pretty, he ran hard. I don't know if he's too physically gifted in terms of speed or anything like that, but ran hard, and I respected that.
Other than that, man, yeah, the team, William and Mary, was not impressive to me. They seemed chippy. Their coach seemed kind of whiny a little bit. Maybe I'm painting him in the wrong way, but it felt to me like kind of how I thought that game would go. I'm not too surprised we beat them 55-7. It was going to be home. It was going to be cold. They had the Grizz benches. Did you see that?
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I don't know if we have warm benches.
We don't. I don't think we do. You're required as a hosting institution in the playoffs to provide equal to whatever you have on your sidelines. But I don't think Montana State has heated benches. So they went out of their way to procure themselves some additional heating options, and good for them. Like we've talked about this offline. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but you know, the example is when Coastal Carolina went to Montana, Missoula, 2013 or whatever it was, they brought all sorts of stuff to keep warm. I think that's smart. Like if you're a team that's not used to the weather, William & Mary fans and we're talking about, it wasn't gonna be a big deal. Players were talking about, we're not gonna wear sleeves. We're gonna go sleeveless and we're gonna be tough. I'm like, that's stupid. In my opinion. It's like, take advantage of modern technologies and stay warm and try and compete. You're going to lose if you try and out-tough a team from Montana most of the time. Not every time, but...
Look at these guys wearing no sleeves. Like Tommy Mellott. It's 4 degrees out there. No sleeves, no gloves. I don't know how he does it, dude. I get cold looking at the guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have, like, once you get moving and you get hit and your adrenaline's going, I don't think it's so bad. It's when you start getting your butts kicked then you don't have that adrenaline, and then things start hurting, and then things spiral. And that's exactly what happened with William and Mary.
Yeah.
I think if they would have scored a touchdown off the bat, or a few other things would have gone their way, maybe it would have been competitive for a little bit longer. But it was real quick before they just looked like they just wanted to go back to their hotel room and, you know, sit in the hot bath.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up. Don't let the door kick you on the way out. Sorry, William and Mary. You guys didn't look up to snuff. I do think the cold had something to do with it. We talked about that last week. Like you said, they looked miserable. They just looked miserable on the sideline too, but they were getting their butts kicked.
That'll make you look miserable
too. I don't know, man. Yeah. Hey, let's talk about our defense a little quick. We have a Golden Cooley question that says, what has improved? Because our defense does look better. And Simeon Woodard got himself an interception. We look faster to me. We look like we're flying to the ball more. We just look like we're having some fun. I would say the last month, our defense has markedly gotten better on the eye test.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint. I think a lot of it is Rylan Ort getting back into speed because he's coming up and making plays at the line of scrimmage or tackling guys behind the line of scrimmage and screaming in and making good plays there. But that's more of a run support thing. Our passing defense has improved too, and I don't really know exactly why. I can't really attribute that to anything other than I think we're being more selective in when we're bringing pressure and we're doing a better job of bringing an extra guy, Ty Okada being the prime example. I think that is helping the pass defense out because we brought Ty Okada. We're bringing Simeon Woodard in, I think, more than we have been, not necessarily on passing downs, but he's been playing really well. He's had the interception, obviously, but he is also making good tackles at the edge. I think they're using him to supplement sealing the edge, like bringing in Simeon Woodard. I think that's been a really good strategy. But overall, I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's been a little bit different in strategy and a combination of that and with Rylan Ort's kind of return to form.
I like how they use Woodard off the edge. He just knifes through the defense so well.
He's physical. Because
he's so quick and slight. Yeah. But then when he hits a point of contact, he just upends these dudes. And then he just, you know, gets in their face and flexes. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. No, and he hadn't been doing that like in the first half of the season too. So it's good to see him kind of regain some of that, I don't know, confidence or whatever it was. I don't think it was confidence, but he's back to form, which is good to see.
Would you go sleeveless in the cold?
Probably. In that,
did I tell you?
In that moment where I was, a 20-year-old kid who was physically in the best shape of his entire life and have been practicing out in that, yeah, I probably would. Right now, no. I would die.
So remember last week we had a conversation about me throwing the ball 40 yards?
Yeah.
I got a little bit of update on that. You want to hear that?
I mean, you sent me a little video, but yeah, what do you got?
So Friday night, I was running with my buddies before the game. And so I was sitting down, we were sitting down in the brewery thereafter, and we were having a discussion on this. And we were just like, you know, okay, from that wall to that wall, how far do you think this is? Because they're like, no way, man, you can't do it. And I was like, I can throw the ball 40 yards. Give me a shot. I can do this. And so the next 2 days later, my birthday happens. My wife threw me kind of a surprise party, invited those two guys to the back to the brewery. I didn't know we were going back to the brewery, but had like a little surprise gathering over there. They're there. Well, one of them brings me or buys me a gift, one of those 100-foot long tape measures.
Okay.
You know, like a construction one. And so we got it out there. We went out to the street. Mind you, the street's completely frozen over. It's been just like anywhere in the Northwest right now. It's just been inundated with snow and ice. So we marked off 30 yards. And then one of my friends was there, and they just lived a couple of houses down. And they're like, he called his son and said, the son I teach, he's like, bring a football over. Foley's got to try this out. So we all went out to the road, marked off 40 yards, and I took three shots at it. I did not hit 40 yards, but it was slightly uphill, and it was icy. I think I got about 36 is what they said. So I think on a dry ground, not uphill, I probably could hit 40. I still think I got it.
I'm not sure I ever necessarily questioned your arm strength. I'm saying I don't think you could do it with the entire scenario surrounding you, aka pass rush, and also full pads on, man. That's a lot harder to throw the ball 40, like 30 yards when you've got full pads on.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right.
But kudos to you. You did it. You tested out. There's a chance you could get it close enough to him. If Cleveland's Thomas stopped in time and came back to the ball, it's a possibility.
I could do it. I still could do it.
He could still do it. Okay.
All right.
And Tommy Mlott missed another wide open wide receiver in this game too.
I didn't see that one.
He threw it into double coverage, and that's where the interception was. We got bailed out by a pass interference call.
That's right.
But Pickering, I think, was out next to, it was Snell. So they must have had both their tight ends on the left side. Is that what the formation was? Which is kind of crazy. But I think it was Pickering came in, and then he cut over the middle. And then the DB or the safety followed over towards Snell. But Pickering was just sitting there wide open again, like wide open over the middle. Zip it to him. I don't care if there's a safety 5-10 yards off of him. He's not going to break on the ball fast enough. That's at least a completion. Like, when that play happened in real time, I'm like, Pickering is wide open. And then I see the interception. I'm like, And it's like, whoo, got it waved off. That would have changed the complexion of the game slightly. It would have only delayed the inevitable. That was all it would have done.
Probably thought Foley would have hit that pass, right?
Foley may have seen that. Yeah, that was in your wheelhouse. He was only about 15 yards downfield.
Yeah, Mlott does not scan the middle of the field. When he knows he's going to throw the fade, he doesn't even look. And I just wish he would.
Yeah, that was definitely I'm throwing it here, and there's nothing else is going to change my mind on that type of throw.
Yeah. Speaking of that throw, though, that throw was so money for us against South Dakota State last year.
Are you trying to segue into South Dakota State right now?
You know, I just served it up for you like a lob pass right there. I'm done talking to William and Mary.
Yeah.
We're good.
Real quick, I mean, what did we learn from William and Mary? Did we learn anything?
That we're dominant. We're a better team now than we were in October, as Coach Vegan talked about in his presser. I think we are a more complete team. Our team looks like they're having the most fun out there as well. They look like they're just the most physical team and having the most fun. And going back to the physical part, Coach Vegan continually emphasizes that. When I listen to him on his interviews, he's always like, we have to be the most physical team. And then when they do the little shots they've been giving us inside the locker room, when he's firing up the players, that's what he's pounding on, man.
Yeah, I've been seeing people talking about Montana State's offensive line, South Dakota State fans, and all these kind of things about they don't blow you off the ball necessarily. I'm like, well, I think they kind of do blow them off the ball. I don't agree with that take necessarily, but they're so physical, man. Like, they're popping people. The wide receivers are popping people. Derek Snell is leveling dudes on the regular. Like, we play extremely physical on offense and defense. Like, it's an extremely physical team. They're not necessarily bone-crunching hits all the time. But, man, no one's pushing these guys around. That is for sure.
Let them call out our offensive line. Watch what happens. How many times have we run over 300 yards this year? 8?
I don't know.
Like, that's just laughable, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Call us out. Watch what happens.
Yeah, but I mean, the podcast I did listen to, like the Jack's Illustrated podcast, was very complimentary on the defensive line. It's just like, they're not blowing guys off the line. I'm like, well, they do, though, a little bit. They do.
Not in a traditional, like, power run, inside zone, power football. I can see that. Like, we aren't moving guys A to B that way, but when we get ahead of them, if we can move in space and get a hat on a hat quote right there, yeah, watch out.
I think they're more moving them kind of like sideways than they are like pushing them straight backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's still moving guys. Still moving guys as far as I'm concerned.
So there's a question for me. Like, if I was going to send in a Golden Cooley question, this could be one of them. Afonso is not that outside zone kind of guy. So our run game has been so good with that lateral movement. Like you said, that the outside zone, Afonso is more of a power inside zone kind of guy. Does that hinder, or is that going to be a problem for our offense?
He ran for 164 yards, man.
I know, against William and Mary. I'm just saying, Like we've been doing one thing, and then Fonsi's come back, and I noticed it was a different style of play. It was a kind of a going back, kind of looked more like our run game we did last year.
Well, there's a couple things here. Number one, Fonsi's two games back now. He's averaging 12 yards a carry, but I think it's complementary, and it's one of those things that even if it's not working, it's setting up outside zone plays. Because we're trying to run up the middle, Devontae. Okay, it doesn't work, but maybe the defense starts collapsing towards the middle a little bit. They're just so complementary to each other that it just is one more thing for defense to have to worry about, I guess, is how I look at it.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably a good way of viewing that. All righty.
All right. Well, nothing else on William & Mary. Man, what a whoop down, as we like to say around here. Super. It's just great getting your starters out in a playoff game. Like that's like the ultimate thing, that if you can get that done and rest your guys and not risk any further injury, plus build reps for those secondary guys. Like that's the dream. That's what North Dakota State has been doing for a decade.
You're right, man. You are right. And now we get to face South Dakota State, which feels like almost could be the toughest game left, including the national championship.
So, yeah, I've been reading this too about like this is the national championship game here. Some people are saying that. Like, I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, the Bison are still the team to beat. Maybe it's not the best Bison team that's been around, but here they are again in the semifinals to probably take care of Incarnate Word at home and make it back to Frisco. So, and who knows how to handle Frisco better than North Dakota State? Nobody. So, as far as I'm concerned, North Dakota State is still the team to beat. But I do think it's probably the most even Final Four I've seen in some time. I guess James Madison, whenever they're in there, is always an equal footing. But three of the four are strong. And I don't know, man. Incarnate Word could give the Bison a run for the money. Pass defense, I think, is kind of one of the things that they're not as good at this year. And, man, Lindsey Scott Jr., I hadn't watched him at all before the playoffs started. That guy is a talent.
Yeah. Unreal. That Sac State game was wild.
Wild.
Just wild. It was like must-watch TV. I couldn't stop watching. I was like, well, they got a minute left. They're going to score. Oh, and then Sac State got two onside kicks. Two in a row. I was like, what the heck's going on?
Man, that was an exciting game. I'm so glad I wanted. Watch that.
I wanted Sac State to win, but I kind of didn't want them to win at the same time because I was a little bit just tired of like hearing about Sac State, but I wanted North Dakota State to come out of Fargo. That's the only reason why.
Yeah.
And I wanted the Bison to have to travel.
Yep,
but,
exactly.
Alas, they don't. And now, you know, Montana State beats South Dakota State. And then North Dakota State goes to Fargo. And we actually beat North Dakota State. That would be something to talk about for years and years.
It'd be the most gratifying way.
South Dakota State is an amazing team. North Dakota State is North Dakota State. They got all the cachet, whether they're a down team or what. You said it yourself. They know how to do Frisco. That is a real thing. They know the stadium. They know how to prepare for it. I mean, that's one thing. Remember last year when we had like fall camp or winter camp is what they called it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just part of what they do every year. Not just some years, but every year. Yeah, so for Montana State to get to Frisco and then to finally beat the Bison, that would be quite the story. Just an epic run.
Yep, that would absolutely be most gratifying and potentially the best matchup for the Bobcats in terms of just pure X's and O's.
Because really? You don't think Incarnate Word would be?
I said the best matchup. Like, I think Incarnate Word, I don't want quarterbacks who can throw the ball scare me more than anything. Teams who do nothing but throw the ball, I mean, NAU nightmares, right?
Yeah, but I see, like, our offense is so good. I think Montana State's offense is the best offense left right now.
I can't argue that. I can't argue that. But before we even get into anything in Frisco, we got a big game coming up. Do you want to recap how, we kind of started talking about it, so let's kind of circle back and finish talking about it. South Dakota State, man, they've been number one all year, and it started off with what did they lose? 7-3 at Iowa? Something ridiculous.
It was like 5-3 or something. It was really weird.
It's like nobody got a touchdown. There was no touchdown scored in that game, so it couldn't have been 7. Man, we're just a...
No, it was 7-3.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was 3. It was 3 and then 2 safeties. It was like 3 plus 2 plus 2 equals 7. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Yeah. But it's an odd game.
But they get into the playoffs, the number one seed, after beating North Dakota State in the regular season. That was a pretty interesting game. I want to talk about that for a second because I kind of went and watched some highlights of that because... doing my scouting, like probably Holy Cross and North Dakota State are probably the two games I want to kind of look at as a Bobcat fan to see what we're dealing with here this year, this year's version of the Jackrabbits. And man, like North Dakota State had that game in pretty much in control for a while there. I'm trying to find my notes here. Yeah, North Dakota State was going to go up 28-7. They were like on the 20-yard line right before halftime. And it was 21-7, and they threw like a bad pick, not pick six, but it threw an interception into the end zone. So instead of like coming out with a field goal at the very least, all of a sudden it's 21-7 instead of 28-7. And then at halftime, you know, the Jacks dominated the second half. I think they only allowed 28 rushing yards from North Dakota State in the second half of that game. They came all the way back from down 21-7 and won the game. Oh, geez. Was it 21-7?
23-21.
Yeah, so there it was. Yeah, 23-21. And there was another point in the third quarter where South Dakota State fumbled it, and it went right to a North Dakota State player, and he like fell on it, and it squirted through his body and like got recovered by Jackrabbits. Like fell right to him. The guy all alone like bounced on it and just like, you know, football's a funny thing. It happens. But... there's plenty of chances for the Jackrabbits to lose that game, and they probably should have lost that game. So they're not, you know, they're not completely unbeatable. And Holy Cross had them on the ropes there too for a little bit too. And that was I watched a good chunk of that game, and I know Bobcat fans are looking at that game and seeing the quarterback for Holy Cross. I don't remember his first name, but Sluka.
Sluka.
Hang on, Sluka. Sluka, hang on. But he had, 200 some odd yards scrambling around looking like Asha O'Hara and Tommy Lott combined. But, you know, didn't matter. They couldn't win the game. But I know Bobcat fans are looking at that thinking that, well, if he can do that, then we can do that. But I'm not sure how much that actually is true, though. How much do you take away from that Holy Cross performance?
Kind of a lot, actually. I think that it bodes well for our plus one run game. I think the Montana State should be able to run the ball on them. And here's why. I don't think South Dakota State plays, they don't play a lot of different fronts. They're a little bit multiple, but they do what they do. They're kind of like the Bobcats as far as their defense goes. And I think that bodes well for us.
But my counter to what you saw Sluka do is most of those were him scrambling around like, oh man, what was that?
Have you met Tommy Milot? Have you seen him?
What was that crazy quarterback?
Why are you trying to counter with that?
Because they're not designed plus run play. One QB runs. Those aren't design plays. It's not the same offense.
It's the same. Okay, I get that. But his first one was a QB run. His like he had like a 60-some yard touchdown that put them up 7-0.
Yeah, I'm just saying there's only been three teams all year that ran for over 100 yards combined on South Dakota State. One was North Dakota State, one of them was Illinois State, and then the other was Holy Cross.
All right. All I'm saying is we got Taylor Hassright, who is one of the most innovative play callers as far as run plays go. I think we're going to be all right.
That one thing that is...
we might not be 300 plus, but I think we're going to be all right.
One thing that's in the Jackrabbits' favor is they are getting their All-American linebacker, Adam Bach, back for this game, who has been injured for a few games. So that is a boon to them. I have a Golden Cooley question here. This is a good time to ask this. By yourself from Danny on Twitter... the Bobcats will rush for 209 or more yards on Saturday. He gets this number, averaging the Bobcats rushing yards per game and the Jacks rushing yards per game allowed equals 208.8. So something's got to give is what he says. So buy or sell, Bobcats will rush for more than 209.
I'm buying that all day long. I think we would go north of 300.
Ooh. I will buy 209 pretty easily, but 300. So my follow-up question to you is, what number do the Bobcats need to hit to win? What number are you feeling good about?
I'm probably 300, to be honest with you. I mean, everybody, we had these same like crazy questions coming in prior to the Grizzly game. I know it's different because Grizzlies are not gap sound, which is still so stupid. And they're running like a three-man front when we have like 12 personnel out there just kicking their ass. Oh, I love that. Good job, Grizzlies. Thank you. Thank you for doing that for us every year. but look what we did against Weber, right? Look what we did the last 2 months of the season. Yes, I think we're going to go above 300 yards, and I think we need to. Here's the X factor. Can we complete some passes, some big-time passes or chain-moving passes, a couple touchdown passes? Maybe if we had two touchdown passes through there, I don't know, with the Chambers, Malott, however you do it, we needed those last year. Because they were bottling up Malott a little bit last year. Malott ran it for 30 times last year. Magical, for sure. But do you remember he hit McCutcheon on a couple of comeback plays, like timely comeback plays that kept those drives alive? We're gonna need a couple of those.
We're gonna need some throws like you did to Cleavan Thomas on the touchdown pass. That was such a beautiful pass. Yeah. Like he's capable of those kinds of throws, and we're gonna need to take advantage of some of those. Passes up the seam, like we saw, like I was mentioning, the wide open Pickering miss. Like there are going to be opportunities in the passing game. There's going to be opportunities. There's going to be a guy open, and if Malott can consistently find the open guy, even if it's for 7 yards, it's going to be, you know, a recipe for success for the Bobcats. Because there's going to be third and fours and third and fives, and those aren't going to be as easy as they have been against a team like South Dakota State. You might have to throw it a time or two. You just can't run it on 3rd and 8 every time and get a first down every single game. Can you? Maybe you can. Maybe the Bobcats can.
I don't like when we're 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. That's like not a recipe for good for Montana State. That's not where we want to be.
No.
Lindsey Scott, different story. Like that guy just thrives on 3rd and 8. He's like, whatever. It's the same as 3rd
and 22, and, yeah. And Lindsey Scott's probably going to find a guy. Convert that.
Yeah.
We're not built for that. And that's okay. But we also take very, very few negative plays. I don't have the stats in front of me, but we don't get tackled behind the line of scrimmage very often. And if it's maybe right at the line of scrimmage and maybe it's a yard backwards. The only time we get tackled far back is when we're doing some sort of weird trick play where Sean Chambers takes a 10-yard sack instead of just throwing the ball out of bounds.
Just do it, man. Just throw it away.
Just throw it at Tommy Malott's feet. I saw the play. He was like covered. Okay, throw it at his feet. Whatever. Live to fight another play.
Yeah. I wonder if that's hard, making that choice, just being a competitor. Like rolling out, I can get this guy. I just got to slip this one guy. Damn it. I went down again. I could have thrown away. And coach is yelling at me now.
That's so funny because that's a funny thing to think about. Every quarterback in the history can throw the ball away. You're talking about physical limitations or all this stuff. Every quarterback is capable of deciding, okay, I should throw the ball away right now. But they all approach it so differently. Remember, Denarius McGee was terrible at it. He would hold on to the ball to the last second and then get like crushed throwing the ball and throw an interception. He was like really bad at it.
Yeah.
He just did not like to throw the ball away. He's like, I'm not throwing the ball away. I'm not going to do it. It's just kind of funny how some guys operate like that.
Got a new guy on Golden Cooley question. Cage Rage is his name. Over under to secure the victory. 150 passing yards plus 280 rushing.
You know, that sounds about right. So is he asking if it needs to be over and under on that?
Yeah.
I will say over, but only like it can be exactly what you said. So 1 yard over each of those.
I mean, if we get 150 passing on this, I'd be pretty impressed. That'd be a good day for the Bobcats. I would say he's probably kind of spot on is where I would think. But I think we're going to be over.
Did he say Tommy Lott or did he say the Bobcats?
He didn't. He just said over under secure victory, 150 yards, 280 rushing.
Because Sean Chambers could come in and throw a 50-yard touchdown pass, and we're a third of the way there. As long as it's not Tommy Malott going for 150, because I feel like this is a game where we could see some more kind of plays like we saw against Weber.
I kind of think we should come out first play, just do play action, just let it rip right down the middle.
That's something. That's something. Get a mismatch just take somewhere a shot and just right fire off the it. Bat.
Just rip it. Just grip it and rip it, man. I'm telling you, they're not going to think it. They're going to just like, well, if they're going to. I like that we've been starting Elliott in the backfield. They're going to be like, oh, they're just going to give it Elliott on the outside zone. No, just fake the handoff. Have a crossing pattern go across the middle. Just take a shot. Let's do it.
The only problem with that is an interception. If South Dakota State wins the toss and defers and we get the ball first and we throw an interception on the first play of the game, it's about as bad as you can get.
Well, could be. But it could be the best thing you could do.
But
as well.
Yeah, true. But Montana State, if anybody's going to have a momentum problem initially, Montana State can overcome it better than anybody I've seen, any Bobcat team I've seen. So, okay, yeah. we throw an interception. They come down and score a touchdown. I mean, that's not the end of the world for the Bobcats, funnily enough. But not good.
Hey, let's talk a little bit. We've been talking about the offense. Let's talk a little bit about the defense. What are we going to need to see out of the defense? How do we not get just eaten up by the Yankee Twins or Tucker Kraft? How do we combat that?
How do you stop Tucker Kraft, who's 6'5", 255? He's going to be first-round NFL draft pick at tight end. Their other tight end is 6'7", 260, Zach Hines. Yeah. And he has like 10 touchdowns in the last two seasons as a kind of a secondary tight end. He got quite a bit of play last week in the Holy Cross game. He's a big man. He's not fleet of foot. Like, Kraft is definitely a better runner with the ball, but Hines is going to catch the ball and he's going to make you tackle him. He's going to rumble down the field and someone's going to have to do it. The Yankee Twins, you know, were they 6'1", 210 or something like that? And Isaiah Davis has been a man on a mission. And, you know, Isaiah Davis had a really bad game in Bozeman last year. I don't think he's going to have a bad game in Brookings. Or at least I don't think he's going to, you know, he's going to do a stiff arm. He's going to do a run where he just mows somebody over and just gets the team fired up. And I don't want to see it, but I feel like it's going to happen in this game. So
did you see that stiff arm he had?
He just tossed that guy to the side like a rag doll.
It was unbelievable. So awesome.
It was reminiscent of the touchdown run I don't know if he scored a touchdown. I'm pretty sure he did. But in the national championship game in the COVID spring season against Sam Houston State, he had a ridiculous run where he was pinballing and throwing people off of him too. He's a dude, man. The parallels between him and Isaiah Afonso are pretty comical. They're both physical, tough runners. They're both wear number 22 and they're both named Isaiah. it's pretty funny. But, yeah, he's a good running back, and they're going to lean on him this year more than they did last year. I think the Jacks are going to come out and try and establish the run right away. They're going to try and,
yeah,
if they can get up runs up the gut and they can do that successfully, it's going to be a long day for the Bobcats. We're going to have to stop that or hold it in check and force them to pass, which isn't ideal for us either, but that means they're off of their plan A anyway, and they're on to plan B, which is still very good for them, but That's going to be the chess match right off the bat. Can we stop Isaiah Davis in the running attack or any QB runs what they have with Mark Gronowski, who is a pretty good solid runner himself from the quarterback position, the parallels between him and Tommy Mellott are also pretty striking. Both freshman phenoms who led their teams to their national championship in their first season and both got hurt on the very first series in the national championship game and both ended up losing the game. So just kind of interesting parallels here, but he's a good player, man. He was not here last year. Chris Oladokun was the quarterback in Bozeman last year who came in because they knew Gronkowski was going to miss the season. So they brought in him as a 1-year guy to take the helm. So there's a few different personnel differences for South Dakota State and also a different offensive coordinator. But otherwise, largely the offense is almost identical to what it was last year in a lot of ways, personnel wise.
I'd say probably even better.
It's better. It's better.
Well, they don't have Pierre Strong. Pierre Strong just scored a touchdown for the Patriots this past week. I think Montana State might get in a little bit of trouble on the edges. Like, I can picture Tucker Kraft coming across the middle or maybe on a fly sweep and just, I don't know. It seems like Montana State seems to have good run gap stoppage. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but
good enough for me.
Our run defense is pretty good. when we start pressing the edges, because we play some zone coverage a lot of time, those edges, if we don't seal the edges, that's where chunk plays come against the Bobcats.
But we've been a lot better at that. Although Weber did have some success in the first half. Josh Davis had...
That's where Ort's been good. Yeah, he's kind of shored that up. Yeah, he flies up and he's really good at tackling. We also have another safety that does really good at that. Number 20, I think that's Pottinger. I don't think he starts, but he's really good at run support as well.
He'll get there. He came in a little bit in the beginning of the year and he just got absolutely just torched. But
yeah,
he's the safety of the future, I'm pretty sure. But I also thought Jeffrey Manning has been playing better too in run support and being more of a sure tackler and coming up and making good plays. So I think the Bobcats are playing the best defense they played all year in the last few games. Like they held the starters to what? I don't know, what, 14 points or was it 7 before the starters came out? I think there was a mixture of starters on Daniel Britt's first touchdown drive, and then the third one was definitely all backups. And then Weber State obviously scored a couple points late when they were throwing the ball. But by and large, they've been dominant the last few weeks. And we're gonna need a huge effort from the Bobcat defense to win this game, because the Cats could score 35 points or 40 points in this one, and that might not win it.
No. Man, I keep going back and forth on this game. How I feel is I'm all over the board on this one. It's really hard. I want to talk a little bit about the intangibles, the things that you can't measure.
Sure.
I think the revenge factor is bodes well for the South Dakota State. Being at home bodes well for South Dakota State, although they don't get a lot of fans. It was weird. I heard today, I can't remember on whose podcast, it might have been Sam Hurd talking about it, that it was they only get like 13,000 home fans, and then you and I were chatting, they only have like 6,000 fans there from their playoff games. So that doesn't seem like a huge advantage, but just being in their own bed, that's always an advantage. Coach Stiegelmeyer, who's an awesome coach, I really respect that guy. He's like one of my favorite coaches I've come across, being a fan of FCS football. He's long in the tooth. This is his best team. He knows it. They know it. They're going to try to win it for him. I mean, I could foresee this being maybe his last run. I mean, when everything is like culminating to this point, that goes against the Bobcats as well. I think just like kind of those intangibles are stacked against us a little bit.
I feel like kind of that was how the Bobcats were last year, though. Like it was kind of this is the best group of athletes the Bobcats have ever had. If it's not this year, then it's never. But here we are, better than we were last year. So you never know on that point. Stiegelmeyer did come on. I'm pretty sure he had a press conference, or I heard it on ESPN Missoula, Coulter Nuanez's show. But he said, you know, the revenge factor is not something that we're talking about. We're not thinking about that. But come on, like player, those dudes are human, right? They remember. Yeah. They might not publicly say it, but that's going to be in their minds, 100%.
They said it after the game.
What they've been doing is they've been replaying, or they did a team meeting and they replayed the post-game press conference from their two team captains from last year after the loss, to try and show like the pain and, hey, this is what it feels like. This is what it looks like. Let's not let that happen again. And he's like preaching, like, it doesn't really matter. It's not so much about the Bobcats. It's just not wanting to feel like that again. But you can say that all you want. That's got to be in their minds. Especially Isaiah Davis, who was just neutralized completely. He had like, what, 5 carries for 14 yards or something last year. Most famously being tackled on 4th-and-1 by Troy Anderson. Probably the most famous play he had last year. So it's a... That factor is definitely in their favor in some regards, but Bobcats are playing for something too. They want to get back to Frisco. That's a terrible taste in the Bobcats' mouth from last year's loss in Frisco, and they've been focused solely on getting back there and having a chance to get that taste out of their mouth. And this is just the next step in that plan. Playing South Dakota State doesn't matter. It's on the road. That's where I'm more concerned, because the Bobcats haven't played as well on the road. So it's not necessarily the intangibles. It's just that it's a road game, I guess. Makes me a little more nervous than anything else. But do you think the the playing for Sonny Holland, is that still something that can carry, the momentum can kind of carry Bobcats forward a little bit from this last Saturday where they honored Sonny Holland?
You know, I don't know. I would probably say no. I think that's a nice thing to say. I think that the guys really respect him, but the win for the Gipper, I'm not sure if that really matters.
Yeah, I'm not sure in this situation it does, but that's just something I crossed my mind. Question here while we're kind of talking a little bit about this. Mike Nice, who his son, I believe, is Alec, who we've interacted with a lot on Twitter. He was part of the basketball.
He told us we have good faces for podcasting.
That's right. Mike did tell us that. Thank you. He asked us, guess the attendance on Saturday. So he says South Dakota State average playoff attendance in 2021 was 5,700. And in 2022, it is 6,300.
So bad.
The forecast is 12 degrees at kickoff. I think it'll be right around 6,300. Like, it's not going to be more than 7,000, I don't think. If it is, it's probably because of Bobcat.
It's a tough place to get to. I don't think. I think they're probably going to be about 1,500 Bobcat fans there.
I don't think they're going to be. It's too hard to get there.
Yeah. All right.
But the crowd, I don't think, is going to be an issue. Let's put it that way. But not having Bobcat crowd journey on, that is the issue.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a rowdy environment. Something. It's just going to be, it's not your fans journey on giving you the juice. You want to just kind of fire good through some point. Fire cells here or some ghouly questions while we're kind of doing this?
Some ghouly questions. Yes, I want some ghouly questions.
I didn't say ghouly.
Yeah, let's do
you
it.
You heard ghouly.
Ghouly.
Russell Dam, who I believe he's the PA announcer in Bobcat State, right?
Yep.
Who has the most yards against South Dakota State? Tommy, Sean, Isaiah, Elliott, or Taco?
Oh, that's a good one, Russell.
That's a good question.
So here's my prediction. I'm going to go Malott. And here's why I'm going to say Malott, because in these big games, Malott keeps the ball to himself a lot. He kind of shoulders. This is a work upon for Tommy, as I believe it to be. So he shoulders a lot of the pressure, and he'll try to make it happen, which he does really good. But I think he should spread it out a little bit more. But yeah, I'm going to go with Malott there.
So he did not specify. I initially read this as like rushing yards, but then Taco Dowler can't really be a part of this conversation. So if it's combined yards and even if we're allowed to include all purpose return yards for Taco Dowler, I'm probably still picking Tommy. Cause he'll probably have 250 yards of total offense at least combined. I don't think anyone else is going to get near that. So if you're counting passing and rushing, I think it's Tommy. Okay, what else we got here? Brendan Henshaw asks us, are there any matchups you think we can exploit against South Dakota State that will help us win? On the other hand, are there any matchups that they can exploit that will be our downfall?
I think we kind of talked about them pressing the edges against us as being a place where we could be at deficit. What about some offense for us? What could we exploit against them?
So I think I think there's going to be opportunities in the passing game. They aren't particularly fleet a foot front seven either. Their front four is very sturdy and dominant, but I feel like they're built to stop North Dakota State. They're built to stop power run, eye formation football. So I think just straight up our speed can exploit them. However you want to cut that, getting to the edges or cutbacks, however you want to spin that, I think that that's where we can kind of exploit them. And as always, there'll be opportunities in the passing game, but you know that's really no different than any other game, in my opinion. What I think South Dakota State could exploit, and I hate to say this, is if our linebackers get caught creeping up, they'll be able to hit their big tight ends up the seam for big plays. We've had to struggle with that on and off all year. We've gotten better at it, but if their run game gets going and we have to kind of start creeping up or sending extra help to stop the run game, that's where the passing game is going to eat us up. And I think a lot of that very well could be Tucker Kraft wide open up the seam or over the top of like an extended Callahan O'Reilly's jumping hand. We've seen that a couple times too this year.
Yeah.
Because it's just You're not right. quite deep enough. So that's what
buy
I would say.
You like this. Thorny Byers, how you like the Saturday game more than the Friday game?
Oh, buy all day.
I'm going to sell that. I like the Friday night games.
Their weather sucks. Honestly, we're not attending the games, so that doesn't matter so much. But it makes working on Friday that much worse. Like I don't
just come sooner. I like it.
It does come sooner. And it does free you up on Saturday to do other things. So that's ideal.
This is a kind of a late kickoff. It's like a 1 p.m. kickoff our time, 2 p.m. mountain time.
It is a little bit later. Yeah, it's good. It's a good question. Here's a couple fun questions. I'm not going to ask that one because I want to kind of get out of here, but that's a funny question on Twitter. But this is a good question. Lenny asks us, what's our favorite uniform combination for the Bobcats? I got an answer for you because I've had time to think about this because I read this before. I'm springing all these on you. I mean, current combinations, I kind of like what we did at William & Mary, but I still like the gold helmets, the blue jerseys, and the gold pants were my favorites.
Oh, that was mine.
But my all-time favorite, man, is just those 2014 Dakota Pro Cup throwbacks. Those were sweet with the script logos. I love those things.
Gosh. Yeah.
So it's not part of the current rotation, but those are my favorite like modern ones I've seen ever.
Yeah. Current iterations, I was thinking exactly what you would thought. I kind of missed the gold helmets. I haven't seen them in a while. Blue, sometimes I like when we go blue with white helmets though too. Yeah. I think that looks kind of cool. That's typically like a mid-October run that we normally hit up. But I don't know. Have we wore blue pants, yellow jerseys, or I mean gold jerseys, and then gold helmets?
If we would have, it would have been for Gold Rush, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So
I like the white helmets that we're wearing right now with like the two-tone stripe down the middle of it with the block M on the side. That's pretty kind of a classic look. I like that.
Yeah. It looks different than what we've had in the past too. It's more gold. I don't know, just gold, more goldy.
I'm looking at some images right now, the white helmets with just that kind of the outline of the Bobcat head.
No.
Like I don't like that very much.
No, me either.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, all time favorite. Those ones we wore in the throwback game of 2014 with Dakota Pro Cup.
Good point.
Those things were so cool.
Ooh.
Bring it back.
All right, I got a couple ones, and I got a couple golden coolies for you. This is from DMSU Brew. From the media standpoint, who's nicer, Stig or Vegan?
It's a good question, man. They're both super nice. I don't have an answer.
They are really super nice. I was gonna probably say Stiegelmeyer. He just comes across as like a good grandfather.
He does kind of. He has grandfather vibes.
Yeah. In all the good ways.
That's funny. So,
I'm going to go with Steegs there. I don't know, man. Every time I think about that now, I think about Coach Vegan saying, we got to put the knife in him and twist it. It's not nice.
It's not nice, but that's not nice, like forward facing. I've heard rumors that Stig isn't like the nicest guy behind the scenes either, but that's all just rumors and blah, blah, blah. Everything I've seen from him personally is like you said. I like it. He's respectful. I have a lot of respect for him. I got one more on Twitter. I think then we're done. Brendan Ireton. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name, buddy. Ireton. Ireton. He said, is Vegan a safe bet to stick around?
I think for a couple more years. He seems like he will do it much like the Bison coaches have. Like I'm sure Matt Entz has had options to go, and he hasn't.
Yeah, true.
Who's the guy before him? Craig Bohl, and even before that,
Chris Kleiman.
They seem to, that's the guy who's at K-State. They seem to stay for a while until that perfect position lands open for them. So I think Coach Vegan probably will move on someday. I don't think he's going to be like the Bobby Houck where he's just like, this is where I want to be. I'm going to be here and I'm just going to bring a whole bunch of old farts with me. We're just going to coach up this gig forever. But, you know, I'm happy with Coach Vegan as long as we have him. Like, he is a stud of a coach. He's going to have offers, though. He's going to have people knocking on his door. That's for certain.
Yeah, I mean, if they make it back to the national championship or, you know, even if they, especially if they win it, he's going to get some calls. Whether they're, hey, come be the head coach at Akron, or if they're, hey, come be the head coach at Wyoming or Washington State or something like that. I don't know. I think he sticks around, though, regardless. His track record proves that he will, that he doesn't just leave a place after 2 years. He's only been at two stops in the last 22 years, right? North Dakota State and Wyoming. That's it. That's the only two places he coached. And the only reason when he was hired here, he said there was like a short list of places that he would ever consider leaving his current job for to be head coach, and Montana State was one of them.
Huh. Yeah, I remember that now.
I just don't see him jumping right away. He might eventually, but I think it's safe for, like you said, another 2-3 years at least. I don't think he's a guy who's going to, you know, just chase the money, chase the prestige. Choate did the latter. I think he just wants to be head coach, so he's just taking the fastest path, whatever he thinks can get him to that end. But I don't see that kind of ambition in Vegan, so who knows? I think he sticks around, though, for a little bit.
Money talks, though, man. When you're talking talks. Big jump, like Washington State or something comes knocking, and you're like, that's tough.
Yeah, if Wazoo comes and offers him $3 million a year, I'm like.
Yeah. Mrs. Vegan saying, all right, we're going to go make that money. You're like, yes, ma'am. We're going to go make that money right now. All right. Who did BP Cats ask?
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
BP Cats asks us a couple questions. I'm going to pick one of them. I like this first one. Is the matchup this weekend the de facto championship game? Talked about this early on. What do you think?
I don't think so. Like I said, I still think NDSU is the team to beat until proven otherwise.
Yeah, I like that.
I hate it. I don't want to say that.
You're good.
But that's how I feel.
Here's one on the weather from River Cat. Current weather underground. This was posted on Monday, so could have been changed. He says, current game conditions is 10 degrees, 15 to 20 mile an hour winds. As Great Falls natives, you know that feeling. Yes, we do. Thank you, River Cat. Which team does this favor and why?
I mean, if we're talking wind, it's got to favor the Bobcats. Because we don't need to pass the ball. We don't rely on passing the ball. What is South Dakota State's not that high in like rushing offense and scoring offense, are they? I don't have the stats in front of me, but I don't think they're like top 10 rushing attack.
I looked that up earlier, but I didn't write it down. But yeah, I was kind of looking at some of that stuff. It's most notably people are billing this game. This game has a lot of interest outside of just being a big game because South Dakota State is the number one rushing defense, and we are the number one rushing offense. And so that's the big headline. Outside of that, I think everything's kind of a wash.
Hold on, I'm looking up. Oh, man. Are they not even top 50? That can't be right.
Sam Herder had it on his hero breakdown.
Let me just keep wasting time here. Well, I'm glad he had it on the breakdown. I'm glad that you don't remember was on there. That's very helpful.
Do you want me to look it up for you?
Yeah, I'm struggling here. Come on.
All right.
I'm doing my control F. There it is. Okay, they're 44th in rushing offense. They average 169.6 yards per game, and they scored 30 touchdowns, and they average 4.52 yards per carry. So that doesn't scare you right there. Isaiah Davis scares me, but overall, I mean, that's a pretty meddling numbers. Now, if we're talking about Missouri Valley Football Conference teams beating each other up and then, you know, they come and play Big Sky teams and they steamroll them, I just don't think that's going to be the case this time, but we'll see.
Good question.
Montana All right. State took over number one by 0.3 yards over Davidson.
Woo!
6.75 yards per carry. That's absurd. Why would you ever pass it if you can do that?
To keep them honest. That's why you do that, Thorny.
Exactly.
So you can run it at that clip. Okay. All right. I think we need to get out of here and choose a Golden Cooley winner.
That's all the questions you got on Bobcat
We got
Nation.
One from WBTFG saying, what has our defense changed since the NA defensively? What has changed since the NAU game? You kind of talked about that. Ryan Lort being more aggressive, yeah. More sure.
Yeah, we got a few questions on that. We also had Zach on Twitter that we, you know, met down in Frisco. He asked us basically the same question. So shout out to Zach for submitting another question. Appreciate that.
I think, too, like McCade O'Reilly's been coming on the scene quietly. I think he's like, as far as linebacker, with the depth we've had, I've been pleased with him. I like Kenny Iden off the edge. I mean, just guys are just there getting better. They're playing better team ball.
Yeah, guys are getting more reps. Young guys like Kenneth Iden and Danny Yu, I think, has also been playing a lot better, too. So I honestly just think it's a better rep, and it seems like the scheme has gotten a little bit better, or the communication maybe has gotten a little bit better, too. But whatever it is, it's working better. There hasn't been the consistent breakdowns like there was for the first 7-8 games. Who do we want to award the question to? We had the Russell Dam asked us about who has the most rushing yards. I thought that was a pretty interesting question.
I just sent Russell a Golden Cooley, so he has one. Not picking him. Sorry, Russell.
About Let me ask him about the favorite uniform combination. That was a fun question.
Yeah, there you go. I like those kind of questions.
A little bit more.
All right, Lenny.
All right, Lenny. Yeah, congratulations, buddy. Woo! I'll hit you up on Twitter.
Woo!
It's a good question. Made us think about that and reminisce about some good uniform combinations of the past.
Bring back the throwbacks. Let's do it, Leon.
Bring it back. Oh man, I'm stoked for this game. Like
it's gonna be hard Saturday waiting that long to watch this game.
It will be. But this is like I've been feeling pretty confident about since we whooped up on the Grizz. Anyone put in front of us, I'm feeling pretty good about. I was a little nervous about Weber State. We still feel pretty good about it. I was less nervous about William & Mary, but you're still like, you know, apprehensive about it. But this is the first game where I'm like, all right, this is a true barrier to the Bobcats going to the national championship game. I know Bobcat Nation is extremely confident right now, and they should be, and we have every reason to be. And I'm feeling confident right now too, but this is the matchup, man. This is it. This is a Final Four. This is what we've been waiting for all off season, building up to all season long. This is the game, man, to get us back to Frisco, to get us back to Texas. Get excited, Bobcat fans. Enjoy the moment.
As Pete said, 60 minutes to Frisco.
60 minutes to Frisco. I love it. All right. Well, let's get out of here, Foley, man. Appreciate everyone for listening all season long. It's been a fun ride, and hopefully we got more podcasts yet to come. You can find us on Twitter, RRCatCast. Thanks to everyone for submitting Golden Cooley questions on Twitter, on Bobcat Nation. We really appreciate the interaction, the fan engagement there. It's a lot of fun for us. You can find us on BobcatNation.com under a couple threads there, the Golden Cooley thread or the R&R CatCast thread that we got going over there. You can always shoot us an email at rrcatcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks to Manhattan Bank for being our awesome sponsor for this year. And Foley, let's get out of here, man. Let's go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.